This is Eon Blues. The following is a radio documentary about the Earth Activist Training, a two-week intensive course on permaculture design and community activism. A while back, I was listening to Earth First Radio being broadcast on Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM, and I heard the following announcement, and I knew I had to go.
And coming up in January is Earth Activist Training, January 4th through the 18th with Starhawk and Penny Livingston Stark. Learn how to create the world you want to live in. This is a permaculture design course for visionary activists. Learn the skills to transform a piece of land, a community, and our political and economic systems. The tools we need to envision and design a just, free, and sustainable culture are the same ones we need to challenge the vested interests that keep destructive systems in place. Permaculture is a system of ecological design. You will spend 2 weeks in the coastal California hills learning nature and wilderness awareness, diversity in ecosystems and our movement, pattern thinking and design strategy and movement building, solutions that exist like alternative energy, organic farming and natural building, bioremediation and restoration, soil and forest ecology and ecological economics, how to collect, conserve, and clean water, movement building, strategy and direct action principles and practices, consensus process, facilitation and conflict transformation, how to transform fear, rage, grief, and frustration into creative action, how to stay grounded and centered in tough and challenging situations, how to create ritual and weave magic into action, and much more. This program leads to a certificate in permaculture design. The core facilitators are Starhawk, who is a lifelong activist, direct action trainer, ecofeminist, and author of many books that link earth-based spirituality with political struggle, including Spiral Dance, The Fifth Sacred Thing, and The 12 Wild Swans, A Journey into the Realm of Magic, Healing, and Action. Penny Livingston Stark is an internationally recognized, prominent permaculture teacher and designer. Penny specializes in creating resource-rich landscapes, non-toxic building materials, site planning and design using ecologically sound principles and methods. Once again, this is taking place January 4th through the 18th in western Sonoma County in California. The real cost of this program is between $9 and $1,500 sliding scale. Some work trades and payment plans are available. We are actively fundraising to provide scholarships to activists and people who serve low-income communities.
Next, we're going to hear a lecture by Penny and Starhawk titled Intro to Permaculture.
You know, we have a lot of work to do out there, and you're going to see where these principles aren't being applied over and over again. And I know many of you, if not all of you, have attempted, you'll notice, like recycling and things like that. You know, there are a lot of things that we have incorporated in our lives. But what we're also working on is how do we transform society to start creating a system, if you will, for culture to change. The word permaculture started out to be about permanent agriculture, meaning because it came from the notion that agriculture was the most destructive activity on the planet. And if, you know, we don't start the way we're growing our food, we're gonna basically wipe ourselves out because we're wiping out the environment, right? But what started to happen, and what Bill Mollison, who sort of coined the term with another man named David Holmgren from Australia, what they realized is that culture reflects agriculture. You know, it's the same. So when you work in changing agriculture, you're actually changing culture and vice versa. So it doesn't matter which end you're starting on, whether it's social justice, the way we grow our food is so exploitative on all levels. You know, we're going to be addressing questions around how do we grow our food in a way that honors all people, all children, all sentient beings, and the land. You know, and that's a big question. And that's one of the things that we're going to be delving into. Another word for permaculture to me would be relationship. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that we really look at, and this is what the principles help us do, is to wrap our minds around relationship. Because what I like to say is this isn't rocket science. It's way more complicated. we're working with an incredibly perfect, interconnected world here. And how we go into interacting with it in a good, wise way is by primarily understanding pattern, and then applying principles to the pattern. Okay, with me? So the beauty of it is you don't have to know everything. You don't have to understand everything. I mean, you won't. You never will. You think you will, and then bingo, you're going to find out it's going to come around and bite you in the derriere because you realize you thought you knew. What limits us is what we know. It's not what we don't know. Just remember that. So that's why observation is the tool. And tonight I'm going to show you a slideshow. And part of the slideshow is going to share how do you go into other cultures and to other ecosystems and start working with the people and working with the land in a way when you've never been there before. The big one. You be very humble. Mm-hmm. That's one very important thing. No arrogance. But we'll go into that. But these principles, what I kept doing, I did a project in Bali, in Indonesia. I'll show you some an organic food project. And these principles really came in handy, I have to tell you. I couldn't have done it without them. And pattern. Hopefully many of us, if we're not already pattern thinkers, will become pattern thinkers by the end of the course. We all think differently, and we also all have to, during this course, honor that all our learning styles are different. Some people have to do, other people have watched, some people have to hear it. So we're going to be presenting information in a lot of different ways because the way that we think is different.
It also strikes me, we talk about observation because somehow that makes it sound objective and scientific. And also because our mainstream culture tends to be very visually oriented. But we could also say listening. And understanding that everything is always communicating and everything is always speaking, and that's true on multiple different levels, from the way plants communicate chemically to the way you can learn to feel or sense their energies, if you're open to that. And so we could say listening or we could say feeling. And we're talking about the same thing, but it shifts it into a very different mode.
Yeah.
It took me a while to learn how to start observing versus interpreting. Mm-hmm. That was a big step. The observation doesn't necessarily require any sort of conclusion or interpretation. It's just opening and totally listening without making any associations.
That's very important, because one of the things that I've learned through this is that the way we are actually doing things in this culture and the way we've been taught in school. And when I talk about this culture, these ideas are also being transmitted all over the globe, right? And we're going to talk about that later. But what I realized is that what what I'm learning is a lot more appropriate is the 180 degree opposite of what we're being taught. For example, insects. You know, what do we do here? Try to get rid of insects. Everybody's got this insect phobia. Well, in permaculture, it's like, bring them on down. We want as many insects as we want. What we want is a feeding frenzy. You have a diversity of insects, you're not going to have an infestation. So I want you to have a couple of worms in your apples, and they're going to wipe out everything. Okay? Same with fungus. You know, we're fungophobic in this culture. And come from the British, I found out. Didn't know that. But hate to say it, they're the only culture actually in the world that is fungophobic. But you know, we need fungus, and we're going to go away in that because I'm a fungophile. The same thing with water. I mean, what are we doing with water? I mean, go drive around here. You're going to see big culverts. We're draining the land. We're piping it. And we're moving it off the land as fast as possible, just rushing it out, draining the land. In permaculture, we talk about taking it out of the pipe, spreading it on the landscape, taking the velocity out and infiltrating it back into the ground where it belongs. And that's what forests do. We take out a forest, we compact the land, water rushes off. So we're going to talk about that. Buildings, I mean, my God. Somehow, aluminum and plastic and fiberboard is normal. And stone and clay and straw are alternatives. Look at Chinese medicine. I mean, here's a medicine. And a healing system has been around for thousands of years, and it's an alternative. But somehow, you know, penicillin, how long was that? Within my lifetime, that's normal. So this switch has only happened in a period of maybe 50 to 100 years, depending on what you're talking about here. Okay? So that's the good news. We can turn the ship around. Hopefully a lot quicker than 50 years. I go back and forth around being hopeful about that. But we have some large forces that we're dealing with here. And one of them is the media. We're also going to talk about that, hopefully, in the course. So the other thing that I just want to say is I want you to know, why is this important? You know, you all know, you're all here because you know it's important, but, you know, you talk to Uncle Harry, and he goes into Safeway, and he sees all this food, and he's like, what's the problem? You know, there's no problem. They took him a tap. One of our interns one time, when she was talking about water catchment and everything, says, her grandfather says, why did you just turn on the tap? You know, it's like, there's a couple things I just want to say before we get started, and one is it takes 600 years, 900 years, depending on who you read, to build 1 inch of topsoil. Okay? Can imagine that. 600 to 900 years for 1 inch of topsoil. And with our current agricultural practices, that soil can wash away in one of these storms. And it does, and it is. Every time you see creeks running muddy, that's our soil being washed away. And it's going to take a geologic time in the forms of millennia to get that soil back again. Okay? Agriculture is responsible for about 80 to 90% of the topsoil loss here. And that's one issue. The good news is with the permaculture practices, we can build soil. I've built up 18 inches of topsoil in less than 7 years. Yeah. That's one of the most important things that we can be doing on the planet. And I know some women, you know, retired moms to the kids laugh, aren't you cute? She's learning how to compost. Well, she knows that's probably one of the most important things you can be doing. And working in Bali, that was the hardest thing. I would consider that we actually failed in teaching people how to compost there until somebody actually moved there, lived there, and helped the people learn how to compost. Because There's nations of people now that don't know how to grow food without chemicals anymore. Okay? This is serious. And Prithvi's going to talk about this later. And there's people in our culture. You know, this. So you guys are like the shining stars, the angels of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because you're learning this stuff, and you're interested, and you care. Water. There's a really incredible book that I have here. I don't think I put it in the library yet, but it's called Water, Our Most Precious Resource by Marc de Verdier. It's in your bibliography. I highly recommend you get this to talk about what the global water issues are. We're going to go way into that during this course. Because we are sucking water out of the ground faster than we're putting it back in. We're taking out water that's taken millions of years to get into the aquifers, and we're sucking it out faster than it can go in. So the good news is that we don't need to be sucking that water out. We've got more water running off this land, being piped off the land, than we need for our needs as humans. And we can start regenerating the earth with all of it. And so that's what we're gonna cover, all of that. And that's what these principles help us to do.
I don't know, but I've been told we are getting bold. We are here to scream and shout, tell you what it's all about. Stand up, 1, 2, stand up, 3, 4, break it on down, 1, 2, 3, 4, 3, 4. Yeah. My palm is filled, my swells are tight, my food is shaking from left to right. Shout it out, revolution, shout it out, permaculture. Enough is enough, the people must rise up. Compost today, compost away, and kiss the back of my butt. Oh, kiss the back of my butt. Oh, kiss the back of my butt. Kiss the back of my butt. Kiss the back of my butt. Oh, back of my butt. Oh, back of my crack. Your money, your jobs, your institutions that never listen to the people need. It's all about greed. Said beep, 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 beep. Take your voice to the street.
Yeah. And I want to know, Jordan, how has the Earth Activist training inspired you?
Well, you know, I've always been interested in activist work and in permaculture, and done a little bit, but it's really important. What I learned from this course was that it's really important to look at the connections between the two, and that you really can't separate the practices that we have that keep us sustained and bring us to a new world. Is you also need spiritual metaphors to help, you know, keep those images and help us remember the symbols that we're looking at. And you also need to stay politically active and help to, you know, bring down the system that we don't like. You know, I'm really reminded of Gandhi's Swaraj principle, that where you both work for the breakdown of what you disagree with and the affirmation of what you do believe in. So, you know, I think that's great, the balance. I've just been really amazing to network with all these people, and to be able to know that I have these colleagues all over the country now who are doing similar work and who I can, you know, always contact and always know that there'll be some degree of support with.
I'm Penny Livingston Stark, and I live in Point Reyes, California.
And I'm Starhawk, and I like to think I live here in the Casadero Hills, but I actually kind of live wherever I am.
Okay. And so you brought people together for Earth Activist training, and you'd be the instructors. So could you start by telling me about what is the Earth Activist training, and what its main purpose is in training people?
Well, the Earth Activist training, I guess, for me was an inspiration I had a little over a year ago. I had taken a permaculture course with Penny, I think it was in 96, and it's something I've always been interested in, and we kind of scheduled a course that I could learn the permaculture and bring some of the spirituality and ritual to. And that was a wonderful experience for me. It was really inspiring and transformative. I had just recently gotten 40 acres of land up here in the Casadero Hills, so it really helped me think about how to design what I wanted to do on the land. But more than that, I felt like it really helped my activism. It gave me principles that applied not just to a piece of land, but also to how you organize politically. The last 2 years, I've been really deeply involved in the global justice movement since Seattle, and involved in doing a lot of trainings for actions and a lot of direct action and preparation and organizing and teaching people, you know, really how to be out on the street sometimes in some very intense situations. And I started to feel like there was sort of like two convergent but almost disconnected movements going on. There's one movement that was a movement of protest and a movement of really contesting the growing power of these global corporations. That was very political in the kind of real strict sense of the word. And there was this other movement of people like the permaculturalists, the bioregionalists, a lot of the people who do bioremediation and those things, who were very solution focused and visionary, and not just visionary, but actually have the tools and skills to make those visions real. But that they weren't necessarily talking to each other. You know, all the young activists I meet out on the streets didn't necessarily know that we actually don't have to pollute our water, or we don't, you know, we do have solutions to our energy crises, and we do have ways of building and living that are not only sustainable but beautiful and abundant. And at the same time, I saw the people who had the solutions. Here are these solutions that were new and radical maybe in the 1970s and now have developed and been proven and work. Some of them are even profitable, but they still remain these little marginalized, you know, oh, that's what hippies do. Mm-hmm. They haven't actually affected the workings of the corporations or the political system, the technology, the economic system. And I saw that the way the global economic and political system is going is actually removing the space for those solutions to exist and to continue to grow. So it seemed vital that those two movements somehow get together, that the people who are out there on the streets know what the visions and the solutions are, and the people who have the visions and the solutions start to get the political skills and the strategic skills to take it out of the margins and actually make an impact on really transforming the system that we live in.
Mm. And Penny, can you answer the question? What is Earth Activist Training? And maybe you could share some of your experiences with community building.
Yeah. Well, I sort of came at it in a similar vein. I was up at the protest against the World Trade Organization in Seattle, and what I was experiencing were a lot of activists, particularly young activists, that were just despondent about what was happening in the world. And this can be extremely disempowering to people. It can actually bring on a form of paralysis and burnout over a short period of time even. And so one of the powerful things that I've been involved with permaculture is, rather than, you know, we need people fighting against the old paradigm, but what we also need are people that are building the future and creating the vision that we do want. And what that's turned out to be is a very much a permacultural vision of abundance and ecologically sound, balanced living. So the other piece, as an instructor, we have taught hundreds and hundreds of people. For me, it's also exciting for me to teach activists, because they're the ones that are going to take it into the streets, take it into their communities. And permaculture is an extremely political discipline, if you will. because it really is not only how do we not support corporate domination, but it's like how do we provide for our needs in a decentralized way within our bioregions. That's the number one goal, and I'm not saying we're there yet, but we can certainly, we're really looking at the systemic issues from community to community to see how we can actually start to transform that awareness into local support and local empowerment.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what's some of the curriculum that is being taught?
Well, one very important part of the curriculum is how to grow your own food. And if you can't grow your own food, how do you support the people within your bioregion or as local as possible that do? It's also about developing and maintaining urban food gardens. It's very inspiring. In Cuba, I just found out 60% of the food grown for the entire country is grown on urban farms. Mm. So it's all doable. So food production, seed saving, is also very important to start maintaining and developing and preserving our heirloom food seeds and all different kinds of seeds, from native plants to all of our food crops that we have left, and also developing seed giveaways, because seeds happen. There's no reason we need to spend $2 for a packet of 20 seeds.
Anytime two vegetables have unprotected sets, yeah, seeds might happen.
Yeah, you know, so seeds do happen. And so that, and then also how do we decentralize our energy systems? How do we develop our own water systems without stressing the water, the groundwater recharge systems? How do we recharge water back in to the land? Water is big, and how we treat our water and how we honor it and how we use it and collect it is a big part of the permaculture curriculum. And as well as how do we build our houses, and looking at all of our materials, where are they coming from, what's the impact on our forests, what are some alternatives that aren't toxic that we can get from within, ideally from within our bioregion again. And it's all doable, you know, building with stone and straw and clay and some wood when it's appropriate, and dealing with the different kinds of issues that we have here, whether it's flooding or earthquake, and making safe homes that are non-toxic, natural materials. In the activist training, we're also dealing with how do you develop a viable campaign strategy, and, you know, what is the issues around globalization? You know, why are people up and leaving their jobs, going up to protest the IMF and the World Bank and the World Trade Organization? What are the issues? And a lot of people don't really know what the protest is. One of the issues I have with the activist movement is that they're calling it anti-globalization. And it's not about anti-globalization. We're not anti-global. We really are pro-social justice, which...
I think a lot of us are trying to move away from that, because we're not even anti all forms of globalization. We're anti... global corporate capitalism.
Exactly.
I prefer to call it the global justice movement.
I am with you. That's
how do you think that applies, like, directly to, like, water catchment and having your own water supply?
Well, what's going to be coming down the pipe, no pun intended, in the future is water tyranny, is the ownership of all forms of water. There are places on the planet where it's illegal to catch your own water, even if it's off your own roof. And these are laws that are developed in order to maintain a dependency on the civic water companies. And so water has become yet another commodity. So by the more people create dependency on catching their own water, the more people are going to squawk when those laws start being developed. It's the same thing, like also learning herbs, learning how to treat your, you know, self with your herbs from your garden for a lot of things. A lot of women are using herbs for menopause. And for a while there, that was going to be threatened, where those women were not going to be able to buy herbs for that they've been staying off of medication and out of the insurance market by being able to treat themselves. And that was almost threatened. So this is why a lot of the permaculture principles and a lot of the methods are political, because it re-empowers people to start taking care of their own needs, mm-hmm. as opposed to depending on the government or corporations mm-hmm. or whatever.
So, Starlark, why don't you tell us about how magic fits into all of this?
Well, the definition I like for magic is the art of changing consciousness at will. And to me, that also applies to making political change. You know, it's about changing our consciousness that allows these systems to continue. And so magic is really the discipline of first recognizing what state of consciousness you're in, and then being able to make a choice about what state you want to be in at any given time, and having some tools and skills to get in that state. And also exploring realms of consciousness that go beyond our ordinary waking rational, let's get these five things done today, and really opening up to some expanded kinds of consciousness in which some pretty amazing things can happen.
Yeah. Do you both see this as a type of bottom-up revolution, if you will?
That's what I see.
Bottoms up.
Bottom-up revolution. Like, if, for instance, instead of taking down their system and then putting together our system, it's like we can replace their system with our system as we build our system.
I think we need to do both at once. And, Penny and I were talking this morning about both of us really having this perception, in spite of everything that's going on politically right now with Bush and all of that, and how incredibly powerful and scary they can seem, but that system is actually really brittle and really on the verge of collapse. And it's kind of like, all right, say we're on the Titanic, which we are, it's not clear yet whether we actually hit the iceberg or whether we're just heading toward the iceberg, or whether we've hit the iceberg but maybe not quite cracked so many bulkheads the ship can't still float. But whatever it is, like, being on the Titanic, not a good place to be. The thing about being on it is, when you're one of the people in the fancy ballrooms dancing and singing and that, you don't recognize that anything's wrong until the ship hits. Everything seems to be fine, everything seems to be normal until the disaster hits. But if you're some of the people who maybe are standing outside on the deck and you're looking, you're saying, hey, why are we going full speed ahead through this field of icebergs? Who put this captain in charge? Why doesn't he listen to those of us who are saying, hey, slow down or change directions or at least put the lights on? This is not a good place to be. And it's really hard sometimes to persuade the happy dancing people that stuff is coming up, because you don't see it until it hits. So for me, the question is, if that's where we are, what do we need to do? Do we need to, overpower the captain and take control of the ship? That might be a good thing to do, change its direction. Or do we need to think about building lifeboats and what those lifeboats are going to be? And I think, actually, that we kind of need to be doing both. That it would be ideal if we could not hit that iceberg, if we could not hit a state of such environmental and ecological collapse that it's really hard to recover from. I think we'll all be a lot happier in the long run if we don't do that. But if we do that, then we need to think about, how do we give people the skills to survive when the things we've depended on don't work anymore, whether they're economic or whether they're political or whether they're technological. How do we get people self-reliant again so that we can do the things that human beings have done, you know, for hundreds and thousands of years as a species: feed ourselves, clothe ourselves, provide for the next generation, take care of the elders, in a way that actually makes sense.
Maybe we can wrap up. It seems like permaculture and the activism and everything goes beyond like a skill and into like an entire way of life, from like the way you interact with your environment, not just of your earth environment, but also your people environment and things like that. Maybe you can both give a summary of that basic idea.
Well, yeah, it is. What happens to people when they come and take these trainings is that they leave thinking very differently than when they arrived. They start seeing possibilities that they never knew existed before. They start recognizing where in their own lives the decisions that they can make, and that we all can make today and tomorrow, to actually start living lighter on the earth and creating an example for other people in our communities to follow. Because we do focus a lot on community activism in this course, we also give a lot of ideas about what people can do in their communities. Whether it's, you know, having a recycle circus and having a stuff exchange and dealing with creating zero waste in your community, to planting gardens for people for free in exchange for being able to collect some of the food, to working with kids, or even joining the Chamber of Commerce. You know, all these kinds of ideas that people leave the trainings with. And so I think it is a path, it is a journey. And it's very, very dynamic and very non-dogmatic, so that it's not just like, you know, you string wires from here to there. It's a living whole system that we are starting to participate in, it, you know, called a community. And when we, even the definition of community can be expanded to not just the human community, but all of the beings and the trees and the plants and the ecosystem and the animals, then all of our neighbors that we live with, and start to include them in our community.
And it really involves a shift in thinking. I guess it's also where magic comes in, that permaculture is about not thinking about separate things, but being able to see the interconnections, and not thinking in isolated units, but thinking in patterns. And that's also very much the way magical traditions work. But it's a profound shift in the way you view the world. And I think it's a shift that we need to make, and that many people are making on a whole number of different levels. That, you know, it's not about saying, oh, I want this rose in my garden and that tomato and that carrot, but about understanding how all the elements in your garden work together as an ecosystem, and can support each other and sustain each other. And to me, it's the same kind of thinking we need in political organizing, understanding how all the elements work together, support each other, strengthen each other. It's the way we need to be thinking about social change. And for me, that change is very much a change that comes up from below. You know, besides the kind of activism Penny talked about, that kind of real community-based local stuff, we also really talk a lot about direct action, about working on the global scale, and really understanding how not just the individual institutions work, but how the whole system of global corporate capitalism works, and where are the points at which we can strategically make a difference to undermine it, to create a crisis of legitimacy for it, so that people can kind of wake up and see some alternatives and start to demand those alternatives.
Thank you very much.
What do you think about the community involvement with the Earth Activist Training?
I think the community involvement is incredible. The people here have woven together a nurturing web where we're all bringing each other up, it feels like, and very supportive. A lot of these issues that we're dealing with are incredibly emotional, and the community here has been an incredible support for us. So yeah, I feel like we've been approaching a lot of issues that are very heart-wrenching. It's really hard to stare at the ecological and social and political realities of the world, and the community here, it seems to be a living embodiment and would like to see our culture transform into. And it's nice to know that so many different people can come together from different backgrounds, united in a belief of care for the earth and care for the people of the earth, and that through that, those principles and through those beliefs form an incredibly beautiful and vibrant community that nurtures one another.
What's your name?
Daniel Carr.
Being powerful, healing, changing, we are born of water, cleansing, powerful, healing, changing, we are born of water, cleansing, powerful, healing, changing, we are
For more information, please visit the Earth Activist Training website at www.permacultureinstitute.com/EAT. You can also write to them at Earth Activist Training, P.O. Box 341, Point Reyes Station, California 94956. That's Earth Activist Training, P.O. Box 341, Point Reyes Station, California 94956. You can also email them at eat@soniccinema.com. That's EAT@soniccinema.com. Finally, I'm going to leave you with Starhawk telling a story about direct action and permaculture.
And particularly, I just want you to know like what it means when you go out on the street and in action and you have the background of permaculture. Mm-hmm. There was this time, like Lisa and Charles will remember this, when like we were trying to block this intersection and there were only three of us. And we could look at it and we knew, like Charles went, scouted it out, and man, there were like hundreds of delegates coming around. If I hadn't had permaculture, I probably never would have thought to dig a swale and fill them down with hand tools. And then we looked at it and we thought, you know, this is not going to work. This might slow them down, but it's not going to stop them. We need a barricade. We looked around, we thought about the principles. We said, okay, let's use on-site materials. So we picked up some of the asphalt we dug up in digging our swale, broke a window of Starbucks, took all the furniture, piled it up, made a barricade, took the coffee grounds, and seeded them with oyster mushrooms. Providing ourselves with both protein and caffeine and snacking functions. And sure enough, it worked like a charm. They came in, all those delegates, and just like a gabion, it filtered them out until it got all silted up with the delegates. But at that point, we discovered they actually made very good sheet mulch. And that proved useful when the riots came and started, shooting tear gas at us. And we looked at it, and it was like, it was hard, because like, we were like, oh my God, I can't see, I can't breathe, I'm going to die. And then we thought about the principles again. We went, no, the problem is the solution. If you don't have an excess of tear gas, what we have is an oxygen deficiency. But we had all that fertility from the delegates who really, kind of made a nice mulch. And we quickly planted ourselves a little guild of fava beans and barley, and in solidarity with our friends in the South, a coconut palm. Dropped the coconut
coconuts dropped on the police, knocked them out, and stacking functions again, we were able to use the milk to wash the tear gas out of our eyes. Yeah. So,